This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. Apple TV Plus's Ted Lasso was once again an Emmy nomination darling this year, landing 20 nods, including Best Comedy. But it's still a bit unclear whether the show will continue beyond its upcoming third season.
Well, it's entirely in Jason's hands, and he can decide whatever he wants, and we'll trust him in whatever.
And he maybe decides. He deserves a break too.
Yeah.
I think there's something to be said too about saying things don't ever have to completely end, right? Things can come back.
I'm Michael Schneider. On this episode of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to Ted Lasso stars and Emmy nominees Hannah Waddingham, Juno Temple, and Brett Goldstein about their tight relationship, which includes cheering each other on in other projects like Goldstein playing Hercules. Also, what's the fate of the show? And how do they deal with all this recognition? And so much more. But first, our Award Circuit Roundtable discusses the lead actor categories and much, much more. It's all next on this edition of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. Stay close. The roundtable's back. Here we are. Michael Schneider, Emily Longaretta, Clayton Davis, Jazz Tankay.
Hello.
Don't all answer at once.
So excited. We're back.
Hi, Dad.
Hi.
It's the delay, the delay of time. We're still catching up on sleep from years and years ago.
Yeah.
Y'all have caught up on sleep. I haven't caught up yet.
That'll never happen.
Yeah, no.
October is, but that's actually when Clayton's busy season is.
Yeah. And so. Actually, this is my downtime right now. This is actually feeling phenomenal.
October is when Clayton and I are not even home. We're like on the East Coast for
September and October. Yeah, September and October. Yeah. I'm just gone. Yeah, that's fine. I'll take pictures of my kids. They'll grow up.
Catch the cradles in the silver spoon.
Yep. I'll feel like Paul Rudd in Avengers Endgame when he sees Cassie and she's all grown. That's what this will be like.
12 years older.
Yep. I'll just be like, hey, kids, how you doing?
Yeah.
Remember me.
You do this for them, though. You do this for their future.
Yep. They're going to benefit so much from Emmy wins, let me tell you. They're going to be all about it.
And they'll be like,
I actually had explained to Sophia recently really what an Emmy was. She didn't know, really. She knows what an Oscar is, but she
how old is she?
11. Like, okay. She was like, so you just get it for, because she was confused. She was like, wait, movies get Emmys too? I'm like, oh God, yes.
and then
we need her on the podcast so she can explain.
Oh God, no, she'd be the worst.
And then you told her TV is really just a 10 episode movie.
Oh my gosh,
that was the highlight of my life.
Yeah. But and then she asked you, oh, so at least you get like an Oscar and an Emmy, right, for what you do, Clayton?
Oh, she asked me. She calls me Clayton. She's straight up disrespectful. She did ask me if it is possible to win an Oscar for what we do. And I said, I mean, yes. If we film it and make it cinematic, then sure.
Yeah, we just needed like a cool short film.
But in the meantime, check out my LA Press Club Award.
Oh, yeah, look at it. I was very happy for you. We screamed loud for you, Mike, in the room since you weren't there.
We did.
We yelled very loudly. We were very proud of you. We were proud of Papa.
Thanks.
But not the Matthew Modine Papa that, you know, thinks he's not dead, even though we already thought he was three seasons ago.
That would be bad at this point, Papa.
He has to be dead.
We,
right?
we all did not ask why he was still alive. Like, we just literally let that go. Collectively as a nation, we were like, yeah, Matthew Modine's back and we're okay with this.
Yeah. No, it's a good point, but
you only get one pass for that though. You can only do that once. Ah, so we got some lead actor stuff, right? Leading men.
Yeah, so the Emmy extra editions are back. Emily is hard at work on them. The first one coming up. When does lead actor come out?
The first one comes out August 1st. We're kicking off August with a slew of magazines. In case you don't have enough.
So many magazines.
No, these are so good though, guys. We have some really good stories coming. Phase one was full of great stories, but phase two, we're stepping up our game. I'm gonna pat myself on the back. We're stepping it up.
As you should pat yourself on the back. But yeah, so we're gonna be talking about the actors in the major categories this week. Mm-hmm. Why don't we kick it off with drama?
So lead actor drama is where all the fun is this year. Because I believe we say this a lot. I really think kind of any of the six could win. And people say that like, and there's really a distant number six, but I really think any of the six can win because it depends on what ends up happening on the night, right? Your predictions have to dictate what happened on the night. Adam Scott win, which I think people dismiss very easily. I feel like a lot of people dismiss Damian Lewis almost a decade ago for Homeland when Homeland did its thing. And I wonder if Adam Scott, you know, getting his first nom after so many comedy great performances, now making the dramatic shift, if he's a little more dangerous than we like to admit.
Yeah, well, so we got Adam Scott. Why don't we go down the list? We got Brian Cox, of course, for Succession. We got Lee Jung-jae for Squid Game. We've also got Jeremy Strong for Succession. Bob Odenkirk for Better Call Saul. Jason Bateman for Ozark, and of course, like you mentioned, Adam Scott for Severance. Mm-hmm. So you're feeling perhaps.
I'm not feeling any. I mean, like, listen, let's be clear. I'm not feeling anything because I can't. I can't feel anything right now. I'm numb. It's actually what I'm predicting right now today, time of recording, you know, date July 19th. I'm seeing a Jason Bateman brewing around the corner because of the stat I had shared that. A lot of actors in the last decade, 6 out of 10 won for their final seasons. And I think that's a very interesting stat. However, Jeremy Strong could repeat, but we haven't had a repeat acting winner, you know, I mean, since Bryan Cranston. Before that, you have to go back to James Spader, Boston Legal. So they've been really like kind of jumping all over the place. And then there's also like his co-star has not won yet, Brian Cox. He has an Emmy for Nuremberg over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But the switcheroos back and forth in the same shows. We saw it with Modern Family. They jump back from Eric Stone Street, Ty Burrell, back and forth like that. They don't do that very often. The West Wing did it, I think, a couple of times. So, and then Lee Jung-jae is coming in with Critics' Choice, SAG, and Globe, which is nothing to, like, dismiss. Yeah. It feels weird that we're not like this is sewn up for him because I feel like we all can feel like he could easily lose just as much as he could win.
Do you sense that Bateman, once again, probably everyone's looking at for director, for directing and not for lead actor?
Not this year. Like he won back in 2019.
Yeah.
And he stepped into it in a... I won't say he stepped into it. Like it's earned, but he stepped into it when he was going against Game of Thrones, three Game of Thrones, by the way. So there was the whole vote split factor.
Yeah.
The Killing Eve was never going to do that. It was the first season of Succession, which limped. It had a good year, but it limped that season. Like Brian and Jeremy didn't get nominated. It lost drama series. So I think director is not really in the cards for him, but I think he may get something. I think lead actor may be where it's at, but also directing this year is incredibly competitive because we have the opposite with Succession now dominating that category.
Well, let's talk about Bob Odenkirk real quick, because obviously there, so much love for him over the past year because of his heart attack, but also the fact that, you know, Better Call Saul is ending its run, even though we know it's still eligible next year. This is the moment when we're all watching the show as it heads to its finale. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't won an Emmy since 1993 when he won for writing for the Ben Stiller show.
Yeah. Both his Emmys are for writing. Yeah. Oh yeah. One of the very few instances in the major categories of winning when your show gets canceled.
Yeah.
Of course, Bob would do it. What a man.
Yeah.
But yeah, he hasn't won for acting at all yet, so it could be a good moment for him. And listen, they're doing the Ted Lasso strategy right now, right? The final season is airing while everything is happening. The final episode is when August 15th,
I think. Yeah.
And final voting 15. Begins August
12th.
Hmm. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, listen, it also could help, you know, his co-star Ray Seahorn immensely, depending on what happens in that final episode.
I mean, if the episode we just saw is any like I feel like she's gotta be in that conversation because
that is a bloodbath category, my God, this year. Ooh. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, just in the lead actors, I think it's just opened up there. Brian Cox also had a lot more to do this season, I think, more than before. So I think that helps him a little bit. But again, you don't know, like 16,000-ish voters, you know, and they're still, it differs from Oscar. It doesn't open up to everyone. It's still peer groups voting. So, you know, who's an actor's actor? You know, Bob Odenkirk. No one's going to scoff or be mad that Bob Odenkirk won an Emmy this year.
Well, I honestly feel like no one's going to be mad about any of those people right. if they win. Like every single one of them, like you have an argument for. It's not like there's one that's like the dark horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you can't be mad at Mm-mm. any. Yeah.
All right.
Even if Adam Scott wins for Severance, like you just can't be mad at that performance and that win.
All right. Around the horn now, what you think is going to win and what you'd like to see.
Oh, my God. Will win Shipman so early. My God. Hurting my heart. Oh God! Well, we can't do Will win. We can advocate here. Okay. I mean, listen. I think pound for pound, if I'm really honest with myself, I think Brian Cox should win this year. I think if I'm really answering myself honestly, taking out narratives of you haven't won before, you know, coming up to the last season kind of thing, I think pound for pound, Brian Cox should.
All right, Jazz. What about you?
Co-sign on that 100%. I think I agree with what Clayton said. He had such a strong arc this season, and that season finale, if you haven't seen it, I'm sorry, but like, you know, when he turns on the kids, it's just
that is incredible. Like every that's like every season. But yes,
I know. It's but very, like, very it's just more yeah. like
spoiler gut alert, punch. He's a bad
yeah,
dad.
Yeah, exactly. But it was just like it was just so much. It. Yeah. Yeah, I would pick him as much as I love Jeremy Strong. But yeah, Brian, I think would be my pick.
Yeah, Emily.
I think I'm going to go with Lee Jung-jae because I feel like for other people, we are really like, oh, they want everything leading up. We, you know, that isn't anything like Clayton said, that isn't anything to like, kind of like laugh at. That's not, you know, that is saying a lot. Yeah. And with this, while this is a good group of six white men, it would be nice to have,
five white men. That,
okay. Five yeah. white men. Yeah. Still, it would be nice to kind of, you know, give that, it was such a good performance and so different on TV that we'd seen yeah. in so long, which is why the show has gotten to be what it is. So I would really like to see that happen.
Just also shout out, Lee Jung-jae would be just the fourth Asian to ever win an acting Emmy.
That's a crazy wild. Stat.
Wow.
That's so insane.
Yeah. Following Archie Punjabi, Riz Ahmed, and what I just learned recently, Darren Criss is half Filipino. Had no idea.
Yes, he is.
Things every day.
I never knew that either.
Nope. Flew over my head. So welcome to the fight.
Welcome, Clayton.
Welcome to the suck.
What a crazy stat, though. Whatever.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Another podcast.
Mike, what's your pick?
I gotta go with Bob. I gotta go with Bob Odenkirk. Mm. I feel like
thank you for choosing it. I'm glad that someone got to.
You know, honestly, like now is the momentum. I think by next year, it'll have been so long since the finale that it's going to be tough for Saul to get any attention next year. So this is the year if it's going to happen. And it'll be riding high right after the finale. We're all going to be talking about it. And it just feels like the perfect moment to cap what's been such a dramatic year for Bob Odenkirk. And for Better Call Saul, and for everything. And can you imagine just that moment when he hits the stage, if he were to win, crowning, like, you know, his turned up life. And just like, there's not going to be a dry eye in the house if that happens. And so I kind of want that moment for the Emmys as well.
Yeah, it would be very reminiscent of Jon Hamm winning. That's one of like the most memorable Emmy wins, I think, of the last like decade, him like rolling onto stage, you know, and getting a stand. And then he didn't know that he got a standing ovation until he stood up, you know, like Bob Odenkirk would get that room would be on fire.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to tell you because I would be in Toronto because it's at a terrible time. Emmys. Terrible.
I was going to say, I won't be able to tell you because I'm going to be in tears. I'm going to be bawling.
Oh. Oh my God.
I mean, listen, you could have already been bawling for 3 hours previously, because that means Ray Seahorn kicked it off with the
win. Yeah. There's a lot of chances for a lot of great emotion on Emmy night. So
Mike, are you a crier when you watch award shows?
Sometimes.
I cry at almost every speech. I get so emotional. I don't know why. Even if it's a show I don't care about, I don't know how I'm like, it overcomes me.
I get caught up, and if anyone else starts to get emotional, even if I don't know who they are, like that's enough for like the waterworks just to come out. Like,
proof that Michael Schneider had a heart. That's exactly where it is, right here, man. That's it. Listen, I also get choked up during award shows. It depends on like what's happening, but I remember like
who it is.
I remember the most like emotional I remember being is like Lupita Nyong'o winning. Like I was like, oh, this is so great. She beat Jennifer Lawrence. I can't believe it. Stuff like that. But moving on to the comedy, talking about crying, let's laugh a little bit with this Donald Glover, Atlanta, Bill Hader, Barry, Nicholas Hoult, the Great, Steve Martin, Only Murders in the Building, next to his co-star Martin Short, and Jason Sudeikis for Ted Lasso, the reigning champ.
So let's start with Steve Martin, because he has not won an Emmy since 1969. Now, granted, he hasn't done a lot of TV since he became a movie star, but winning for writing again for the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour in 1969. So, but what do you guys think about Steve Martin and Martin Short? You know, it almost feels like they have to cancel each other out, because if you're sitting there voting, how do you vote for one over the other?
Yeah. I was having a discussion with a friend of mine about this category in particular. And we were like really having like, it wasn't heated, but it was like, all right, so Jason Sudeikis has kind of, you know, it feels like he could win back to back. Ted Lasso, it's weird to say overperformed, but it did the exact same number as last year. And it did better than I think people were anticipating it to do. And also he's walking in with SAG, right? He won SAG, Globe, and did he win Critics' Choice? He might have won Critics' Choice. So he's walking in with the same stuff as Lee Jung-jae. However, if you go pound for pound, who the best in the category is, I would say Martin Short. Like, I honestly believe that Martin Short is, like, him and Selena are magic on that show together. And I think he gets a lot of the what I call the purity votes of like, I'm really voting for the best. Steve Martin gets the legend votes. And the reason why this comes up a lot is the Bill Hader factor of it all. Is he really winning the third lead actor comedy Emmy for the third season? And Barry, because if you don't have Hader winning this, do you have Barry winning anything on the night? And that seems strange, right? Like that Barry will win nothing.
Well, I mean, you still have Henry Winkler out there as well, which we could talk about during the supporting week.
Yeah.
We talk about that, but you know, he's definitely still in play.
Yeah.
But yeah, Barry like has the larger issue of, you know, the narrative that it's become such a drama that does that make it more difficult for it to win any comedy awards?
Yeah.
Does the same hold for Atlanta?
I feel good that Donald Glover and Nicholas Hoult are not coming within an earshot. Like, I think Glover squeaked in. Like, honestly, Atlanta also just didn't do very well on Emmy nom day.
Yeah.
But like, I think, you know, I mean, again, there'll be like a lot of an establishment, like familiarity to go with him. And it, obviously there's, you know, if you're looking for diversity, he's a great candidate to get behind. And I think without Anthony Anderson in the lineup, you know, that gives him a lot more of an edge. I think Atlanta's time passed in a lot of ways, but it's a penultimate season. Maybe they say to themselves, all right, we'll get to you in 6 years when you come back again.
Right.
I don't know when it's coming back. Did they even announce that yet?
No. Well, no. They shot the last two seasons back to back. So the other one's coming soon.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. So it won't be as long a gap as last time. But that's part of the problem, is that gap was so long. And there's
the longest hiatus of any show that returned this year was Atlanta.
I mean, Barry was a long hiatus too, but Atlanta was even longer.
It was a year longer because Glover beat... No, Glover won when the year before Hader won for his first or second, whatever that was.
Right. So it was Glover in 2017, Hader in 2018 and 2019, and then Sudeikis...
2020.
So to that then, Clayton, how much is this current season of Only Murders helping, like, Martin Short? Or how much do you think that's going to help? I haven't seen the rest of the season. I don't know if anybody else has, but...
I'm actually operating on a week-to-week, which is very new for me. I'm with the world watching the show.
Same.
Even though I have the screeners, but I refuse to get to episode 8 and stop and then wait for everyone else to catch up. So,
which is what I did.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I'm taking it week by week too.
I saw the way Emily looked afterwards and I didn't want to be that anymore. No, I think it helps. I don't know. Like, the second season is good. And if Selena had been nominated for lead actress, I think it would have helped her a ton. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's helping the show. And that's not to say it's bad. Like, I think it's on par. I think it's just like we're going through it right now. That's my take. I don't know if anyone else has different feelings.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like Selena is the only one that's like actually, they're giving her even more to do, which is really nice to see because she is crushing it, in my opinion. But yeah, I don't think that it does anything for the two guys. I mean, it's not like it was like, well, maybe we'll see if they can do better. Like, we all know that they're comedy legends. It's not like they need to make us laugh more than season two to prove that.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's a three horse race. Hader, Martin, Sudeikis. Martin Short feels like a four, like right now in my head. And then I think Hoult and Glover are just like, you know, they're happy to be there, but I don't think they're really going to do much, but who knows? But I do. If I'm predicting right now, I think Hader is going to do it again.
Interesting. You don't think Sudeikis goes back to back?
No, I think a little bit of the bloom came off Ted Lasso. And I know that sounds strange to say with 20 nominations, but there was a sense of, again, when it won Critics' Choice and SAG. Like, a lot of people, like that Modern Family fifth season win, when people were like, again? You know, so, and I think when you have, I think Brett Goldstein is very competitive and supporting actor. I think Hannah Waddingham is going to battle Hannah Einbender to the death this year in supporting actress comedy. So I think you have to ask yourself, how much is Ted Lasso going to win? If you have a winning comedy series, I think Go Sudeikis is fine. But if you have something else winning comedy series, I don't know if you can choose Sudeikis. That's just a little bit of my method to the madness.
No, it's interesting. It is just looking at these names too. Interesting, just a reminder of the SNL alumni club, and just how powerful that alumni club really is.
Mm-hmm. By the way, it's Bill Hader's 24th nomination overall. Wow. He's the most nominated actor. Like, he has most Emmy nominations of everyone in the category. At 24. Steve Martin has 13. Martin has 12. Steve Martin has 12. Donald Glover, this is 10th. Sudeikis, this is his 5th. And this is Nicholas Hoult's 1st.
Yeah, look at Hader, because I mean, Hader got a bunch for South Park.
South Park. I mean, he's always a producer, writer. Yeah, two writing noms. No, one not. Is he one or two? Whatever, something this year. Yeah, like he, like he just racks them up. He has four Emmys already.
He's a guest this year, right?
Also Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is hilarious considering how much they just went all over the place. And not went all over the place. They went like just Ted Lasso here and here. And they were like, mm-hmm. yeah, Curb, we'll do that.
Yeah. And
no Tracy Ullman, by the way. Right. Like mm-hmm. crazy.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That was like the definition of guest actor, though. Like Bill Hader just showing up playing like three different characters that were the same person, yeah. but they weren't. They just that is a true guest actor.
Also indicative to me, that's the signal to me that he is going to win. He got that when you get that extra nom that no one asked for. It usually means you're getting something down the line.
People do love their Bill Hader.
Love the Hader.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, love the Hader. When have you ever like used that?
All right. Well, what about let's move on now. Lead actor in limited or anthology series or movie.
Yeah. Colin Firth, The Staircase, Andrew Garfield, Under the Banner of Heaven, Oscar Isaac, Scenes from a Marriage, Michael Keaton, Dope Sick, Hamish Patel, Station 11, and Sebastian Stan, Pam and Tommy. Hands down, the best looking acting category maybe ever assembled. I just want to point that out. Yeah. Like, the only thing that would improve it is having Mike Schneider there nominated for the Variety Award Circuit podcast.
Yeah, no, this is a good looking group. And also this is a like fresh faced group. When you look at first nomination for Andrew Garfield, first for Oscar Isaac, first for Hamish Patel, first for Sebastian Stan, and then even the legends here, Michael Keaton's, this is only his second nomination ever. And this is only second nomination ever. None of them have ever won an Emmy. So this is a fun category because whoever wins, it's going to be their first Emmy.
So fun little stuff, I think, just going back. Most nominees that serve as like literally maybe their sole representation for their shows, like in this category, like it was the only, I think Under the Banner of Heaven has like one other nom somewhere. Scenes from a Marriage didn't get anything else. Staircase got two, right? I think that's it. Like just Colette and Firth.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting that they actively looked outside their conventions. And thank God Mary Bartlett didn't go lead, by the way, because you know he would have been in here.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So I mean, I hate saying this because obviously anything can happen, so please take this with a grain of salt. But I feel like this is the one place you can just say it's over. This category.
I feel like there's two categories this entire season that are like a lock, and I think this is one of them. I would assume. And it's just
curiosity. Your second one, I want to know, what is it?
I mean, Jean Smart, perhaps. I just don't see her losing. I mean, obviously a different topic, but that's I think that for to me those are the two locks. I cannot see Michael Keaton losing this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Talk about crying in award shows, Mike.
Get ready.
That SAG PTSD. Ooh.
Oh my. I just recently rewatched that.
Can you live stream yourself while you're watching it for Michael Keaton's speech, please? That would be incredible.
Maybe we rate our cries, like cry-worthy speeches. But yeah.
I mean, speaking of rolling onto stage, because that's what he did at SAG.
Right, when he was in the bathroom. So perfect time.
I asked myself, did he know he was coming up next? He had to have known, right?
I don't know, but that was a
perfect. I feel like he didn't.
Out of it.
Cool. Well, because, you know, at SAGs, you've got wine on the table. So if you're like enjoying
you gotta
it.
Go, you gotta go.
And also, if your like award is toward the end, you've had a few glasses, you're feeling a little buzzed and you're probably being a little goofy and you're going to the bathroom and suddenly you're rolling on stage.
So
yeah, that speech was the perfect amount of like starting off so funny, had everyone cracking up, and then had everyone just like
let's kill everyone right now.
Yeah.
So I think a legit question: who is the runner-up? I think that is an act you can argue. Like before noms, I would have said Colin Firth because I thought like Keaton would win Emmy And then Firth would win like the rest of the year. He would win Globe and SAG when like after, you know, in that weird calendar thing. But now that we've been presented what we've been presented, I think it's Sebastian Stan.
I was going to say that for the sheer fact that it has like all these other nominations across the board and nobody else has. Like, he would be my runner up.
People love
if, it weren't, if he were so, I would not know. Like,
yeah. I was truly shocked at the love for Pam and Tommy. So I guess that anything is possible. I loved it, but I just mean that with the Academy,
with that said, and to get with that said, and to give Mike here some like love and support here, Amish Patel, and not just because they're both of Asian descent, but I really think he could Riz Ahmed this. Like by accident, like just the Emmys are the one place where I've walked in every time. Like I know something. I feel like I know something's going to happen. And then Merritt Weaver wins for Nurse Jackie, and then it just then I realize I don't know a thing. I don't know anything about this group. And shown last year when Ewan McGregor won for Halston. For no reason, like just like now, like because he's a great actor, but like it was just like there were two Hamilton guys there. Paul Bettany was there. WandaVision was the most nominated series, and then Ewan McGregor said, "I'm just going to take this Emmy. I'll see you guys later."
Yeah, but none of them were up against Michael Keaton.
That is true. By the way, Riz Ahmed beat Robert De Niro, Jeffrey Rush, Benedict Cumberbatch, and his co-star John Turturro, and Ewan McGregor, coincidentally.
Yeah, well, that also was a very much buzzed about, talked about. I mean, everyone watched that limited.
Yeah, the Night of was great, except for the last episode.
So, and I still don't know, like, if obviously Station 11 got a lot more attention than I was expecting, which is fantastic. I still don't know if a ton of people watched it, but
I mean, it did well. Like it. We were talking like right before nominations, Mike, and we were like, that thing is surging in a weird way, and we knew it was going to pop up in major spots, and we just didn't know kind of where. So while people were probably surprised by Hamish Patel, they were still like, yeah, that made sense. But also got directing or writing, one of those.
Yeah,
you know, it did well, and I think I again a purity vote, like a Martin Short's purity vote in that category. I think Hamish might have a little bit of a purity vote here. Not saying that Michael Keaton's not a purity vote either, because I think it's the one very rare time that those two things match up sometimes. But yeah. I do think there is a big pocket of support for Patel.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think for you know, Sebastian Stan as well, like you mentioned. And, you know, Staircase really, like, you know, that sort of rose up at the right time. So people are still talking about the Staircase. And then
I'd argue the wrong time, by the way. I think it can't, all those May drops didn't do well, like Emmy wise.
Yeah, except for Colin Firth for Staircase.
Yeah.
Yeah, Colin and Tony Collette. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's,
yeah. And then, you know, you've got Andrew Garfield and Oscar Isaac, you know, two superstars.
They just want to break the internet. Yeah. That's what it is. They just want to break it.
But with two shows that I don't think many people. Again,
stop it. They're the shows are good.
Oh, they're a great show.
Actually, I haven't finished Under the Banner of Heaven yet, but Scenes from a Marriage was great. And I think also indicative that Oscar Isaac got in while Jessica Chastain did not, because I thought she was pulling him in. And I think that's interesting that he got in on his own.
I feel like this show was 25 years ago, so I'm like shocked. Like, I was so surprised that people were still like, because of Oscar Isaac, I'm not, but because the show was just, it seems so long ago and so far out of the conversation.
So many people DM'd me and they said, how is Squid Game eligible if it came out in 2020? I was like, it didn't. It came out in 2021. Like,
time is just not real.
I wasn't even making fun of it. Like, it's a legit, like, I don't know when things are anymore. Like, no. I still refer to last year as 2020. Like, I don't, like, there is a, like, a gap year. I don't know how old I am a lot of times. It's rough. No. It's rough. By the way, happy birthday to Elizabeth Wagmeister.
Yeah. Yes. Of course.
Co-star of the take. Just want to put it out there on the podcast.
Co-star.
Yeah, that's it. So that's what
that's
we have.
That's our lead actor.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll come back next week. Talk some.
No, we're not. We're not coming back anymore.
We're done.
We're done with this.
All right. Well,
we are done with this. I'm done with this season.
Before next week, I promise.
No. I think you should grow it out. I think you should ponytail this.
How high are you going to go?
Oh, I think that's what you should do, Mike. You should say, I'm going to grow my hair until Bob Odenkirk wins an Emmy and see how long this goes.
Oh my God. Could you imagine?
It would be a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Sure would.
Oh, finally, that man bun that I've always wanted.
So. I think you should grow it long like Sebastian Stan in Pam and Tommy and pay tribute to that.
I think you should dress up as Pam and Tommy for Halloween.
As both of them.
Both of them, yes. You should do a composite, a half and half.
Yeah, the half.
Oh my God, that's someone's got like
that would be someone, so amazing.
I wish I knew someone that good at makeup, and I swear I would try it.
Yeah,
you could do like half of the red bathing suit and then half of the leopard print.
I don't think I should do the red bathing suit. you were trying to get me arrested in California.
PMC Halloween.
I know. Right. Actually, Jay would probably love me forever.
Gauntlet is thrown.
It would go down in history.
All right, let's get to our interview for this week. We're talking to the Ted Lasso folks. Having a good
time. Ted.
Right there. Hannah Waddingham and Juno Temple and, of course, Brett Goldstein.
Her name is Hannah Waddingham Davis. I married her.
Oh.
She's
the best. Fresh.
She's the best.
Breaking news.
She is the tallest woman I've ever been in love with. She is just fantastic. She towers over me.
This is how we know Clayton's wife does not listen to the podcast. Yeah,
she says worse to my face. So it's like, interesting. Look where this goes. Oscar Isaac getting nominated, probably the worst thing that has happened.
We'll see you next week, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
After the break, Ted Lasso stars Hannah Waddingham, Juno Temple, and Brett Goldstein. From Los Angeles, this is the Award Circuit Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. It's the Variety Award Circuit Podcast. I'm Michael Schneider. In season 2 of Apple TV Plus's Ted Lasso, AFC Richmond owner Rebecca, played by Hannah Waddingham, starts the season dating a dud, but eventually strikes up an unlikely relationship with one of the team's players. Meanwhile, Roy Kent, played by Brett Goldstein, is struggling to adjust to life after retiring from playing football, while embarking on a relationship with Keeley, played by Juno Temple, who's also exploring her own new career. In episode 1, Roy Kent gives Rebecca some savvy advice.
Well, I think he's a really good match. I mean, he's age appropriate, financially appropriate, he's not shy.
I love that about him.
Totally.
Fucking hell.
Is there a problem?
Tell the truth. He's fine. That's it. Nothing wrong with that. Most people are fine. It's not about him, it's about why the fuck you think he deserves you. You deserve someone that makes you feel like you've been struck by fucking lightning. Don't you dare settle for fine. Not that it's any of my business.
I recently sat down with Waddingham, Goldstein, and Temple just to watch the chemistry and effortless joy that the trio has in interacting. This is a group that will continue to bond long after the show is over. We began by noting that the three of them were in Los Angeles for an Apple TV Plus For Your Consideration event to celebrate Ted Lasso's Emmy nods, but it meant they weren't back home in London to experience the terrible record-breaking heat there.
Well, you guys all, like, you're missing the big heat wave. Are you, like, bummed that, like, this historic, like, what is
it? I'm absolutely thrilled to be nowhere near it. Apart from my little girl is literally melting.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, bless her little sausage.
You're going home to a little puddle.
Yeah. A gorgeous, delightful little puddle.
To whack her in the freezer.
Reformer.
Well, that I don't know if this is TMI, but I started saying that's what we should do with my... a copious amount of chicken fillets as Keely is start putting them in the freezer because it's so hot on set. And I was like, that would be genius.
Oh, that's good.
Cool down.
Very cold boobies.
Chest, yeah. Be absolutely brilliant. Frozen breasts.
So is that the glamour part of this job?
Oh, when I have to undress as Keely every day, I have to wear a Wonder Bra with two sets of chicken fillets. So it's literally like a ba-dum, boom, boom. So the glamour is, yeah, and a lot of fake hair for me and a lot of eyelashes, and I love that. I like being honest about it. I think it's important in totally. This day and age as an actress to put out there in the world that you can have these boobs too.
And look, they're lucky fillets to spend the whole day with you.
Especially if we freeze them so they don't disappear.
Are they the same ones, or do you?
Yeah, we've had the same ones for a long time because it's all about creating the same sort of shape, I think.
Yeah. Well, and then in the end, you get to, like, when the show ends, you auction them off and make a lot of money for charity. Or?
If anyone would be interested, I would do that for sure.
I feel like that's something to be done.
There we go.
But
down the line, babes, let's do it.
How long does it take then to sort of transform into Keely?
I normally have about between an hour and an hour and a half sort of window, but that is definitely because Nikki Austin, who is our hair and makeup designer, she really knows my face and she sort of plans looks with Jackie Levy, our costume designer, and it's definitely a collaboration. It's like a tripod with the three of us because it's so much fun putting Keely together in the morning. She's such a little, like, bold and ballsy kind of creation. And I feel like her inside colors, she addresses them on her outside. And she's not ashamed to wear things that are colorful and vibrant and sometimes maybe a little inappropriate, but also completely perfect because it's her, you know? And it feels like rather than her dressing herself to be like, look at me, she's dressing herself to be like, this is how I feel. And I love that about her.
Yeah, yeah. She's still the spirit of this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Hannah, I mean, Rebecca obviously has evolved as this show has evolved. So has that sort of changed, you think, her look and her presentation and how you sort of approach just the overall package of this character?
Yeah, in a different way from Juno with Keely. I mean, I drive the seamstresses mental because I'm like, can we just take another like 0.5 of a centimeter out of this skirt? Because I've always had this idea in my head that even though Rebecca's internal monologue is an absolute house of cards on a daily basis, externally, no one would know. So she has to be completely perfect for me. I need to look in the mirror and see no like extraneous material anywhere. If a bow is tied, it's tied to perfection, perfect nail, all the rest of it. So that her aim is that nobody really looks in because she doesn't know whether she wants them in there.
Yeah.
Because she continues to be a little bit lost.
Yeah.
Even though she's finding her feet for the first time ever as the owner of AFC Richmond.
Yeah.
So it's really important that, like, if I get a little bit of my own roots coming through in my hair, I would leave it, but I always want her to be completely immaculate. So she's like that kind of unshatterable ice queen.
But as she opens up to, you know, the idea of, say, a relationship with Sam.
Yeah, it's like a flutter of the shutters opening and then they snap shut.
Yeah.
So, I don't even know whether I want the shutters to open fully. I quite like the fact that she's a bit erratic with that. But I have to say it's brilliant that Juno's just mentioned them because my particular hair and makeup, Sophie Roberts and Jackie Levy, our head of costume, they are really fabulous women that understand, you know, on any given day that we are going to want to collaborate with them. And that's quite unusual for people to totally treat you like we're in it as a team.
Yeah, that's cool. Because obviously that's so much a part of the character as well.
Yeah,
so.
It really is.
And
it
also
really
creating is. Two really different women physically.
Who are like
best friends.
Yeah, but like you were saying
so
about
fun.
The whole thing about Keely, I find that there's an element of Keely that is trying to show up and be a little bit like Rebecca, which is so gorgeous as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she just adores Rebecca. And I love that. Like this sort of, I mean, there's this friendship, but also this mentorship and this sort of love between these two. That's been so fun.
Intoxicatingly dependent on each other, I think. And it's gorgeous to get a chance to play that.
Yeah. Mm. Especially because it's like, it's positive. It's healthy. It's like a good intoxication.
Oh, 100%. Oh yeah. There's no, nothing but love between them. It's really, it's, they're beautiful scenes to play. We love them, don't we?
We love them. Sorry.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah. You could swear.
Yeah. Oh, I can. Then. Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah, it's like, it's also because it's just, it's kind of like, for me as a woman on the planet, I find women are safe places for me. And so getting to have this friendship off camera as well, and getting to do scenes that sometimes between the two of us are some of the really emotional beats or really open beats or honest beats. And so having it be a safe place with somebody that you love off camera and on camera is like, it makes it easy.
It's almost like they both have a breather from what they're trying to emit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a breather with each other.
Yeah, yeah. There's a safe space. Hey, you guys remember this from last year?
Yeah. That
cover
was
a variety.
Gorgeous day.
I have that framed in my house.
Yes, in my house. That was a gorgeous day. It really
just
was.
I love this shot, too.
That was great.
That was such a great shoot.
It really was.
Also, to get to be on the cover of Variety and get to do it together was
so tight.
That
was insane. I mean, that's seriously like a total bucket list moment for me. To do a cover of something like this with her was really perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
To remember this show. It's more special. Yeah, it's more special because it's sharing it with somebody that you're going to have a life with forever.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you get that, which is, you know, an honor.
Not to leave Brett out, though. He was on the front page of Variety.com today for a good chunk of the morning.
Oh.
Thanks to last night. Thanks actually to my colleague Mark Malkin talking to you all about Thor.
Right, yeah. I don't know what kind of trouble he's got me in, but I was slightly worrying when you're a headline. You're like, what did I do?
Well, you had such a cute story about your parents and the sort of the surprise at the end of Thor and what that means now for playing Hercules. And
Hercules is so hot.
And also their reaction to it. I love that there also is sort of this support group on Ted Lasso where you guys are off doing other things as well, but you're all still sort of supporting each other, talking about it.
We're fans of each other. That's just simply how it is. Massive fans of each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. And it comes off. I mean, so...
Also, it never gets old when one of your best mates is in a big Hollywood movie. Yeah. You're like, oh, shit, that's my homie.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
you don't see Roy Kent turn red all that often.
Yeah, he's blushing. It's true.
Thank God it's a fucking podcast.
Let's say he's here, he's there, he's every fucking where. So that's true about Brett Goldstein now too.
Seems to be.
Yeah, I'm right.
Seems
to
be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're so low key about this though. I mean, you're in a fucking Marvel movie now.
What's the alternative? Running down the street again. I'm fucking Hercules.
Hollywood Boulevard. Right. There might be some people doing that.
I quite like that on a t-shirt. He's fucking Hercules. Yeah.
I think
sounds very different.
You need to.
That's your dirty, dirty mind.
And that was.
That's how you sell the shirt. It means one thing when it's on Brett Goldstein, but it means something else when it's on everyone else.
Yes.
No, I'm fucking Achilles.
Oh, it's Spartacus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's good.
So are you used to that now, though? I mean, we made a big deal about that last night, but that is pretty, pretty cool on top of everything else you've got going on.
Yeah, I mean, look, all these things are so weird and surreal. And, you know, the reality of filming the Hercules thing is, you know, it was one day. So in terms of my lifespan, it's a very small, amazing experience, but it was one day. And so it's odd the... You know, it's fucking great, but my brain can't compute it. So
one day, also, more to come.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Truly, truly don't know. That could be it.
Yeah.
Fun 3 seconds.
That's never it. That's never the end.
No, because forever you're going to be Hercules.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's happened now.
That's come.
Like, as a godfather, as a parent, as a friend, you're Hercules.
Always going to be cool.
It's going to be your...
It's Uncle Hercules.
It's a big deal.
Yeah. And my nephew and niece keep sending me pictures of them pretending to be Hercules.
See, that's what I mean.
And they're pretty
that's
good at it.
Big
and if I'm ill, I reckon you could put green screen dots on them and let them fill in.
Just take over.
Yeah.
That's why I think.
Yeah, same with Roy Kent, right? If you can't make it, they'll come in and just throw out that language.
Yeah. Well, I've trained them well.
I know as much as you love this, and you mentioned it during a panel that you guys had last night, that of course Sesame Street was by far the coolest thing you've done this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be dark about this, but I felt like afterwards, I flew home after it, and I thought, if this plane crashes, I'm fine with that. Like, as in, I've really, this is the pinnacle of...
You literally sent me a complete, I knew it was completely serious text. You sent me a message, and you were like, I'm worried that I've actually had the best day
of my
life.
Yeah.
And I knew he was serious.
It was so wonderful. And there was a thing about it, I've talked about this a bit before, but it was like doing Ted Lasso, because the thing that I think, if I may say, works about Ted Lasso is that everyone in it, everyone in the crew, everyone in the writers, every single part of it genuinely loves it and knows they have this kind of, you know, it's amazing that people have responded to Ted Lasso. But there's then a responsibility, like we all are put our hearts into this because also that's what people take out of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I went to Sesame Street, which has been running for however many years, and it's not the original cast and all that, as I was going there, I was thinking, this could be terrible. Like, if they're dickheads, this is going to ruin my life.
Yeah.
And not only were they wonderful and welcoming and so lovely, but they genuinely were making this like it was the most important thing in the world. You could feel every single performer, every crew member, their hearts were in this thing and they knew how important this show is. And there was like a moment I had with Elmo and Grover where they genuinely were like trying to make the script better. Elmo was like, I don't think I'd say that. Elmo's not stupid. So why am I saying that? We're changing the script, moving stuff. We had a bit of physical comedy. They were like, how would this actually work? I was like, this is incredible. Like, no one is going, that'll do. You know what I mean? It's like,
please get them on the show.
Oh, fuck
it. Elmo's an asshole though, right?
No.
How big is Elmo?
Oscar the Grouch.
What?
How
big is Elmo?
How big are they? I can't continue this interview if this is going to be
Elmo's
the tone.
Like as big as my torso.
Okay.
If I was hugging him, okay. we'd have.
So he's quite little.
Yeah, he's a little boy.
I love that.
So do the two of you have something that is like Sesame Street and the Muppets for Brett Goldstein? Like Hannah, what is
the Muppet Show?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kermit, Miss Piggy, all my childhood with my dad, he was used to call me Miss Piggy. You know, but all that, like, you know, the Pepe the King Prawn is my favorite character. Yeah. I was talking about this with Jason Segel the other day, that my from his movie, my favorite character is Pepe, because he goes, I'm not a shrimp, I'm a king prawn. I feel his pain.
Yeah. But he's also got a great attitude.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, I love every holiday season now. Brett's old Muppet Christmas Carol bit pops up again. It becomes viral every single year. That's like, so you're now also kind of connected to that.
I mean, there's no greater honor. There's no greater honor than being in the same service as Muppet Christmas Carol.
I do feel like if anyone is like situated to do a new version of the Muppets, it's not just Brett, but the entire cast of Ted Lasso.
Yeah,
make it happen.
I would love to do Ted Lasso and Muppets.
I mean, it's and Bill Lawrence. Like, what are we doing? Like,
why are we wasting our time without Muppets in it?
To just have them do that, you know, the crazy Muppet run, like, from one side of the screen to another in a football strip.
Yeah.
All right. Gorgeous. Well, that sidebar, we'll work on that in a bit.
If you could.
We'll have a breakout room.
Plant seed.
How do we get more Muppets in?
Gino, do you have something that you were passionate about as a kid? Or are you still like, is sort of your version of like, if you ever got a chance to go on that set or meet these people?
Dinosaurs and Barbies. It's my immediate answer.
Wait. Dinosaur Barbie.
As a child, this was a crazy thing that I don't remember, but I was told by my parents because I grew up watching kind of crazy, amazing, like, Jean Cocteau films and Paul and Pressburger. So, like, The Red Shoes and La Belle La Bette were my favorite films at 4 years old. So I didn't really grow up watching TV and stuff. I was brought up watching those on Laserdisc, and I was completely in love with The Beast, which was really challenged every man that came into my life later on. Also, like, Jack Skellington was a huge love of my life as a child.
Yeah,
and But dinosaurs were, from a really early age, a complete obsession of mine. And I was brought up for the first 5 years of my life in LA. And there's that incredible dinosaur park, which is out towards Palm Springs. And there is a picture of me. I must be four. And it is the picture that I've seen in my life of just pure joy. And I am looking up at this dinosaur and I'm like, oh, wow, that's Juno being really happy. And I've always loved, but I would not get on a plane with my parents without carrying my sort of, you know, foot and a half tall T-Rex, because I thought that's how the plane flew. I thought T-Rex put a plane on its back, ran around the world. Wow. That's how I thought the plane operated. So I wouldn't get on the plane without my T-Rex, but then I also would have a Barbie in the other hand. So it was this weird kind of combination of T-Rex and Barbie being total homies.
Yeah.
Which kind of summarizes me as a human, actually, I feel like.
I like the mashup, though.
Right. Dinosaur Barbie is
right
a
it, really good idea. Write it.
Dinosaur Barbie, that is another sidebar, another
dinosaur
room.
Dinosaur Barbie.
Yeah, you'll be having a breakout room for Dinosaur Barbie.
Yeah.
I play the dinosaur, you play Barbie.
Vice versa. Okay.
Well, there is that new Barbie movie that they're working on right now.
I know, I'm excited about
that. Dinosaurs. I hear it's great, but it's
missing dinosaurs. Yeah, yeah. I think that's the second, the sequel.
Yeah.
At some point.
Land Before Time, I did watch, actually. I had that on VHS. Yeah. Great film.
Did you ever watch, because that dinosaur park in Palm Springs reminds me of Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
I didn't grow up with that, actually. No, I didn't. And I actually still haven't seen that, but I did just, I'm guilty of watching Jurassic Park multiple times in one night sometimes.
And rooting for the dinosaurs.
Always. When I went to see the new Jurassic World, and the dinosaurs in it are so epic. If you ask me the actual storyline, I'm not sure I could tell you, but I was so invested in the dinosaurs that when, this is a spoiler if you haven't seen it, there is a moment where you think T-Rex is going to die, and it made me cry.
I always feel like I'm that one in the first film that, you know, there's the nice one that's like, oh, look, he's just by the cars, and then he goes, and he's this big. Yeah.
And he shoots out the ink.
I feel like
he comes back in Dominion.
Yeah, I feel like he's my spirit animal.
Yeah, yeah. Dinosaur plus humans usually equals dinosaurs. So that's if anything we've learned from the equation of these movies over the years. So, well, you guys are out sort of like talking about these Emmy nominations. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Everyone.
A bit grown up, isn't it?
I know.
Like, everyone on this entire, like, I think I may have accidentally gotten an Emmy nomination just for interviewing you
just
guys.
Just rubbing it on.
Like, congratulations. Like,
just any connection to Ted Lasso. That's pretty insane, right?
It feels really crazy, actually.
But also it mirrors the show. That's the whole thing that it feels so magic about this whole experience, I think, is that it doesn't feel like we're getting nominated individually. It feels like an appreciation for the hard work and the brilliance that everyone puts into this, and the patience and the kindness and the givingness that we all have with each other that you really feel on the set and off the set too. And I think the fact that so many people from all different departments are getting, you know, the nod and the appreciation for what they're doing on this just speaks to how much of a team we are and how it's the team that makes this work. And forever, I think that will be one of the greatest privileges of my career to get to do this with this entire team.
Very odd to finish this one. Really is.
Okay, you open the door.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that. No one has told me it's over. No one said that to me, but no one said that it's not. So I'm literally in limbo and I'm just being told.
I think there's a lot of confusion out there because you guys have kind of danced around it. I know, Brett, you've even been out there and said they're writing season three as the final season.
That's how I understand it as well.
Here we go.
Let's set the record straight.
What it's written as in the story we have been telling will reach a conclusion. And that's how it was always planned. That doesn't necessarily mean
it's an ending.
It can't continue.
Yeah.
But it is a conclusion. It's a kind of three-act conclusion
to this
story.
Yeah. Yeah. So then
beginning,
if it were
middle, and end.
To continue, perhaps.
It would.
I will only do it with Muppets.
Yes.
Then and dinosaurs and Barbies.
Yeah. Yes.
Sam and Rebecca open a bar. They call it Cheers.
Yeah.
Bringing it all back.
Pepe's behind the bar.
Yeah. I love it.
So that makes, I mean, it seems like, yeah, you can't really be definitive just yet because who knows?
Well, it's entirely in Jason's hands and he can decide whatever he wants, and we'll trust him in whatever.
And maybe he deserves a break too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's yeah.
Yeah.
He should have a nap.
There's, yeah. There's something to be said too about saying things don't ever have to completely end, right? Things can come back years later or they can not. But I think there's an interesting thing with TV that when you're seeing shows that are a continuous, you know, characters and they're going through seasons, it's not like when, unless they die, which sometimes happens in TV shows, but when that show comes to a conclusion, those characters don't die. They go on and live their little fruitful lives in somebody's imagination. And then, so you can come back to it. And as actors, I know we're going to miss them all a lot. And I am for sure. Keely has taught me so much about being kinder to myself. And I really miss her when I don't get to play her. But again, we all got to meet through it and we're going to get to hang out with each other. And that's why also this show has been so amazing because of the people that we work with it together on, you know?
Yeah, we've got a lot of good eggs in this box, big time.
That have changed my life, your life. It's really been...
It has.
And that's, I'm grateful for that for as long as it does or doesn't last, you know?
Yeah. And you know, this is a character that started as a promo. So in some ways, and you guys have already done some animation. I mean, there's so many different ways to sort of, you know, keep this franchise going in different methods. The all three of you, your own spin-offs.
But also you don't want, I think there's something about it too, if you don't want to push something so far that it then doesn't become the joy that it is.
Absolutely.
Right? And I think sometimes people get, and I'm guilty of that, of like when a show ends. I remember when Friday Night Lights finally ended, I was like, never!
I was like, that was Schitt's Creek. I was genuinely bereft that I wasn't going to have Catherine O'Hara in my telly box.
And you feel
anymore.
It. You feel it, but then you go, you know what though? Actually, I have to respect that it's time for it. There is a time
and
for
things to stop. And you don't want it to water down and become and be less than it was.
Right.
It's true, but that's the biggest thing for me. That it's a beautiful entity as it is, and if that's how it remains, then that's how it was meant to be.
Yeah,
kind of watering it down.
But we're not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, I mean, the good thing is we genuinely don't know.
Yeah,
I would have definitely blown it by now and said, "Oh no, we're teasing you." There's another one.
No, I don't know.
I know, and I could tell even this conversation kind of brings down the room a little bit. There is that sadness that comes with thinking about that.
Big time. It's been brewing since season one for me. Yeah. Thinking, oh God, when's this going to end? When's this going to end? I don't want to leave her.
Yeah.
This character.
Yeah.
Big time.
And now this group as well.
Yeah. Well, that will have that.
That worries me less, actually.
We'll make the time to see each other. I know we always will. And especially because we'll probably be, you know, there's so many exciting things happening for all the people in this cast as well. Yeah. And off camera too. So we're going to get to go all over the world to see each other, which is exciting as well. Yeah. Go and visit friends making crazy projects where you're pretending to be in Mars or you're just in a trailer park. That's where you'll probably be visiting. Yeah. Or in London or whatever, wherever it is. And I think the joy of that, of making friends that you love and care about and like you were saying,
you
support with their
for.
Career, you can go visit them on the next job and it will be, I'm so excited about all of that.
And eventually everyone ends up in a Marvel project.
Yeah.
So eventually you're all in the same universe.
I know how hardcore the NDAs are. For all I know, they're both in a Marvel film right now.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm really massively jealous of him for being in a Marvel film.
Or is she in the Marvel
film? Exactly. Or is that a red herring?
I mean, but you would be a fucking hot superhero. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. By the way, the number of things that Hannah has been like talked about in recent years, by the way. Like,
what do you mean?
Like all different characters, roles, things that people think what you would be amazing at.
Oh, I'd stay out of that as much as possible.
Oh, I think there is nothing that you couldn't do if
Freaks
you put your mind
out.
To it, Hannah. Yeah, sure. Come on. And I mean that in real life, personal life, and also on camera life. There's nothing that you couldn't do. I know that. I'm with you a lot in both.
Anyway.
Are you excited for House of the Dragon? You,
The prequel to Game of Thrones?
Oh, that... And Brett Goldstein just hit my foot under the table. I genuinely don't know very much about it, although I have done...
That's clear.
I have one of the guys in it. Solly McLeod is in a thing that I've got coming out on, I think it's ITV and PBS, coming up soon, which is a remake of the Henry Fielding novel, Tom Jones. Ooh. And he plays Tom Jones, and I play Lady Beniston. I play a glorious, filthy slut bag.
That's the one I got pictures of.
In white, powdered wigs, it's great.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It's intense. 1700s.
Looks like a superhero in that Captain Hair.
Yeah. That's exciting. I want you to write the press materials for that. By the way, that's the best description of a character I've heard in quite a while.
That's what she is, my friend. That's what she is. Old school cougar.
Judo, what are you excited about? What do you have coming up?
Well, after we do this season of Ted, I'm actually going to go to Calgary and shoot the last season of Fargo, which is
amazing,
terrifying.
So cool.
Amazing. Will you guys come visit, please?
Yeah. I remember when she was talking about it, I was like, you're totally going to do that.
I
can just see you in it already.
I'm nervous as hell. It's a very different.
Why?
Because it's a super different character for me, you know? It's going to be
a
different accent.
You're a complete chameleon.
You're the best actor in the
Seriously.
World. I love you.
Seriously, you swap and change. I don't think even. I was talking about this last night. You don't know this, but seeing as we're on the subject, I said that to several people last night. People don't realize how much she immerses herself in everything she does. And people, it's flawless. She doesn't let anyone see the work that she does on every character.
Do you know, it's taught me more about acting than any person. And I do go, anyone who is nice about my performance in Ted Lasso, I go, it's sort of half Juno, because I'm just playing off what she gives me. And she's just fucking...
Yeah,
which is what I always say. It's about two people, so it's a mutual meet in the middle, maybe. But
herself wholeheartedly.
Yeah,
it's quite something to watch.
If I wasn't an actress, I would be in an insane asylum. Is what they're really saying. Because when it comes to real life, I'm not very good. Yeah.
That's exciting though. The accent too, because that is very specific.
Oh yeah, go first.
What have you been watching to prepare for that accent?
I haven't yet because I'm still living and breathing in Keely world,
still
and I want to hold on. Yeah, for as long as I can, and then
you need to hunker down and get Frances McDormand in your head.
Oh yeah, heaven. But it's, you know, this is again big shoes to fill, and amazing performances that have done that show before, so it's quite a lot to live up to and a lot to be fearful of and excited about. But I think things that scare me, like what happened with Ted Lasso, when Jason thought I was right for a comedy, I was like, dude, you've texted the wrong actress, my friend.
Again, talking
you're normally finding me in a trailer park doing something, you know, strange or whatever. And which I love doing that too. And I've done it many a times because I hate the word type. I hate being told, you know, oh, you're getting typecast. No, actually, I haven't perfected that yet. So I'm going to go back there until I feel like I've nailed it. Mm. And so I will continue to do that and always, I think. But I think it's... It's important to do things that scare you, right? And the challenge of that is also about challenging yourself with your teammates and your co-stars, because if you're frightened, it means you also have to ask your co-stars for help. And that's how you make connections. It's how you actually create a space where you guys can fucking act together, because sometimes it's scary as shit.
Mm. But we had that, didn't we, the other day?
Sometimes it's even scarier going home at the end of the day,
yeah.
Right? So that's why the connection is really important too.
Yeah.
And yeah, so every time you start a new job, there's always the fear of all of that too. But yeah. I love my job.
It gives you the buzz and pushes you, doesn't it? I find the things that you're most fearful of when you have your like first day at school on a new job.
Mm.
I am consumed with, oh God, you're going to be the shittest person in the room. But it makes
you
work that
much
harder. You might get fired. Yeah.
How has that changed by season three in terms of those fears, those feelings? Are there still moments?
Yes.
Well, you kind of know more that you're not going to get fired, because that would be an awkward
that'd be
story.
A problem. Yeah, that'd be tough to.
So that bit goes away, but you still in every scene. I mean, Juno and I have this a lot when we do scenes together. We're both always doubting ourselves, and the other one bolsters the other one up still now. We worry that we're not going to serve the scene well enough. We worry that we're not showing the right parts of our two characters and how they, you know, we really dissect it all. And I think the best part about it is self-doubt.
Mm.
If you think you have it all sorted out, I think that's when you become boring to watch.
Yeah, and that informs these characters who don't have it all sorted
out.
Have their own self-doubt.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, some of my favorite moments in season two was Roy Kent, of course, on the anchor, like on the TV stage.
Oh, brilliant.
Like those were such great moments. And
so
I kind of want to see I want to see Brett as Roy Kent actually, like, you know, doing a sports recap show.
Yeah.
Like, one of these days you're going to have to pull that off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But a Muppet version of Roy Kent.
But a Muppet.
Yeah,
Muppets.
Yeah. Oh, my God, a Muppet version of Roy Kent.
That would be nice. Yes, please.
The greatest beard in the world. We get the Muppet
version of Roy Kent, and then he plays Hercules when my nephew and niece are busy.
So beyond Hercules, what are you excited about coming up, Brett?
I genuinely, because I write on Ted Lasso as well, my whole life for the last 3 years or 3 or 4 years, however long we've been doing this, has really been focused on Ted Lasso, as in half the year writing it, half the year making it. So again, this thing of, oh, if this is coming to an end, and as I say, I don't know, don't quote me. I'm worried I'll be too sad to do anything else, but it's like, oh, now there's a... There's loads of things I'd like to do. There's loads of things I have development, all that shit. But who knows? It's kind of exciting and scary that I don't know exactly what I'm doing next. I have things I can't tell you because they're not at the stage where they're definitely happening, and they might not.
And you don't want to break that news right here on this podcast right now?
For God's sakes, no. I'm in enough trouble.
That's like movie jinxing or TV jinxing.
Yeah, exactly.
If you say it too soon, then it dies. Yeah.
So who knows? Mate, you know, see what happens.
Is that ever, and I'm sure you get this question a lot because you are in the writer's room, you know a bit more than your co-stars.
It's so annoying.
Look, I said this last night at the panel.
It's so irritating.
I've ruined, you know, Tahib, who is also my screensaver and I'm in love with.
Sidebar.
I've ruined the ending for him because I have told him that he dies at the end and that he dies in a helicopter accident. But the helicopter's not moving and it's not even on. He just runs straight into it.
And I'd watch that.
I think it's a separate... Listen, we've always got to keep the audience on their toes.
Right, right.
And sometimes I tell people things like that just so they're prepared. Yeah. You know, he's got to be prepared. He needs to know where...
But we had a great time with you being in the writer's room throughout season two because it meant actually we got to talk about scenes that... Because we had so many amazing scenes to do last season.
I loved them.
And it was all... It was, again, I feel like what you were saying of these moments. As Keely, I get this really precious time with my castmates where actually quite a lot of the scenes are quite intimate. A lot of them are one-on-one, maybe two-on-one. You know, it's like, so I get to see different sides of the footballers or of Rebecca or of the coaches or whoever, because it's normally kind of a more intimate relationship. So with you in the office and these private moments where we see these kind of more inner workings, and I got the pleasure of that last season with you, and getting to talk about it because you're in the writer's room as well beforehand was something that, again, I think helped make those scenes feel even more intimate, right?
That was my favourite scenes to do. When we were in Keely's house, it felt so like an island, like we were sort of, it wasn't on the set where we normally are. It's this kind of almost private space and there's no one else there. And I mean, there's, you know, crew and cameras and stuff.
But you feel
they
that.
Have to film it.
You feel that in those scenes, but watching it. Those scenes are absolutely perfection.
Well, that's his doing, because Brett was talking about how it was a magical thing to explore, not the, you know, the wooing and the exciting beginning of a romance or the ending of a romance, but just existing in the relationship and what happens with a couple when they're existing in the relationship and the wonders and the absolute violent terrors that happen within that and not being afraid to show both of them and show them with love and show them with romance, but also show them with honesty. And that was something that I'm so grateful that was something that you wanted to do with me.
But it's you two. I was just there.
So are Roy and Keely still together?
Who knows? I'm going to answer on their behalf. Who knows?
That's the question you've gotten 100 million times. I guess we'll find out. Tune in when?
Who knows?
Who knows?
And what's going on with Rebecca?
What is going on with Rebecca? Who knows?
I can tell you more about Hercules than this.
Is there what's the latest on the ETA when we do get season three?
Genuinely, who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
We have no idea.
2027?
That's a long time.
No.
Yeah, but
there's obviously more detail and intricacy, even more than before going into it, because it is the end of this chapter. Would that be a good way of putting it?
And I think we, you know, Jason's very, we want to land the plane well.
Yeah.
You know, we've come this far.
Yeah.
And it's all...
Let's not set fire to it.
Yeah, let's make this, you know, as good as it can be.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful, whatever it is.
Any more special sort of standalone episodes like the Christmas episode?
No, I can't say. Who knows? I nearly answered that question.
You almost did.
Yeah.
Almost got him.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. So yeah. What? Maybe at least give us a word to describe season 3.
One word?
One word.
Because I was going to say ground control to Major Tom.
You're allowed to have a couple words. Okay, three, four words. Ground control to Major Tom.
I would say for Rebecca, conflicted. Personally?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's...
And Brett, how would you describe season 3?
One word.
Or 5.
For everyone, season 5 mm-hmm. is becoming.
Oh.
I actually don't
at all know what that means.
At this point, I would have to say for Keely, uncertain.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's spot on.
That's really interesting, all the different words that we've just picked for our characters. Mm. Also, considering that you and me definitely don't know a bunch of stuff.
No. No.
Yeah.
Well, stay tuned then.
I mean, also that I just picked a random word, sister.
Yeah, exactly. Chair.
Yeah. Simon.
So what's that? Anchorman. I love lamp.
That too. Well, congrats for everything. I'm glad we still have more Ted Lasso coming up in our lives. So I'm not going to worry about the future. Just worry about today.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the present. Yeah. Enjoy the place to be.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having us. This is really fun.
Yeah. Thanks for stopping by. And
thank you.
Good luck on this this journey.
Our pleasure. Bye, guys.
That's Emmy-nominated Ted Lasso stars Hannah Waddingham, Brett Goldstein, and Juno Temple. As we wait for season 3, you can catch up on the series via Apple TV+. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Drew Griffith edited this episode, and Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Emmy predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Emily Longaretta, and Clayton Davis, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.